Hello, Internet! Welcome to episode 196 of the Assorted Calibers podcast. The segment podcast is a little bit for everyone. I'm Weird Beard, and with me, as always, is the very lovely hostess, Erin Paulette. How are you doing, Erin?
I'm trying to shake a headache, and I'm slightly grumpy. I'm going to try not to let it affect me, but if I start just getting like this, you know, it's nothing personal. It's just a combination of my head hurts and I'm losing my patience.
Yeah, there's the days that when you're the bat, and there's the days when you're the ball. And today was one of the days when I was a ball too. So let's see what happens here. Oh, what's the worst that could happen? Oh,
well, went and said it now.
Yeah. So yeah. I woke up grumpy for no apparent reason and just having trouble getting out of my own way. And then, I read a bunch of the latest news. So you know what?
It is looking like, well, we're definitely going to have two info dump episodes in a row. I don't know if we're going to make a habit of this or not, but oh, good Lord, the two-way news is coming thick and fast, and at least last week, I feel like about half of it was good, and most of this is not. All right, so let's just take that running leap right into the brick wall. So we are recording this on the 11th of April. And by this point, you folks know that Biden had an announcement, and there was a whole lot of war-gobble about guns and ghost guns and ATF director and things like that. And my reaction to a lot of this is just to start drinking. Okay, I've got one thing to say about this when we start getting into the ATF, but I'm already starting to lose the will to live. So, Weird, I'm tagging you in.
Yeah, so where to start on all this? We'll talk about the Steve Dedelbach, I don't even know how he pronounces his name. I don't care.
I don't know how it's pronounced, but looking at it, I would say Dedelbach.
Yeah, and one thing we can know for sure is Biden also does not know how to pronounce it, because I definitely watched the speech he gave where he announced him, and there was a lot of warble. You did the thing better. like I didn't think you could pronounce that meme of the dog drinking from the sprinkler.
The trick is to kind of make a gargling sound in the back of your throat.
But yeah, he's appointed him. He's, oh, surprise, surprise, he's anti-gun. He is not quite as anti-gun as David Chipman,
which is a very low bar, let's be honest.
It is a very, very low bar. Literally, David Chipman was an anti-gun. It was and is still currently is an anti-gun lobbyist. So yeah, there's that. So
compared to the absolute horror show that is David Chipman, Dedelbach is merely bad.
Yeah, no, I literally, while reading up on this guy, I found Stephen Gutowski linked an NPR interview that he did, and I clicked over onto that and then recorded it, and it's sitting in my Fisk folder. So we will be hearing his voice sometime at a later date. Luckily, it's a very short interview, so it won't be a super long Fisk, but it's there. So there's this guy. He's the head of the ATF. Honestly speaking, this is like, it's bad. It's not great. He's not a good dude. He's not the type of person we want to have at the head of the ATF. He's also exactly who we'd expect Biden to nominate, especially since like he had the absolute gall to nominate David Chipman. As I said with Stephen Gutowski when I was interviewing him about Chipman, is like one of those. There's no way the White House didn't do like a basic background check on Chipman and got some of his personnel records and saw, oh, he's been, you know, formally disciplined by the ATF for issues of a racial nature. huh, in this time of heightened racial tensions. Perfect. Nominate him. So, yeah, this is... I wonder if there'll be more stuff. But furthermore, the ATF hasn't had an acting director, or hasn't had a director. They've only had acting directors for... Jeez, I don't even remember. I think we talked about it a while ago, but it's been years and years and years and years. I think it was under George W. Bush was the last time there was an actual director at the head of the ATF. So,
well, then that would be 12 plus years.
Yeah, exactly. We discovered it was part of the Patriot Act. There's actually was a good thing that actually was in the Patriot Act. It's a horrible bill. I hate it, but within it, there was a statement that the head of the ATF and a few other positions needed to be confirmed by the House and Senate. And we just didn't do that ever again. So, yeah, that's of the least concern, because, again, the chance of this guy getting confirmed is just by the raw numbers is low. You know, we'll see. Maybe if there's no skeletons in his closet, maybe. But I don't know. There's that. The worst part is, President Biden was announcing plans to crack down on quote unquote ghost guns. Notably stating that like the kits that I think we talked about in like the last round table, the kits where it was an 80% receiver, and then it would also come with, you know, a magazine, a fully assembled upper with sights and all that. So you could just, you know, take out all the parts that aren't a gun, take out the one part that is 80% on its way to being a gun, finish off the work, and then you can assemble a gun there with all the parts that you had in the box. Well, that's now magically considered a firearm. And to, I think, cement that even further, instead of just making it hand wavium, the ATF has issued a new ruling on what constitutes a firearm, namely what is a receiver. And I'm not going to dive too deep in this. I talked to Benjamin Bratt, and we're going to be sitting down with him tomorrow. Actually, we'll be talking about that because I started wading through the actual ruling. The summary is not very clear at all.
No, the summary is not. I read it several times, and they're talking about grandfathering in split receivers, and mm-hmm. they make it clear that this applies not only to the AR-15, but basically any semi-auto pistol with a slide, mm-hmm. but they don't actually talk about what they do, and I don't know. Maybe I'm lazy, but I'm not going to wade through a 360-some-odd page PDF of ATF doublespeak to try and figure out what it is, especially when I find out that an actual firearms lawyer is going to be talking about this.
That's exactly where it went. But that is the rough cut that I've got, is that I am not an expert. I am only skimming what other people are starting to point out. But yes, it appears that at this exact moment, this ruling changes nothing. It will change things going forward. It's my understanding that it is not only grandfathering guns that exist right now. So therefore, actually, ironically enough, we're doing handgun radio, and Ryan actually just got an AR upper as a promotional thing from one of our sponsors. So that just got mailed to his front door, and I'm like, "Woo, God, that just went under the radar." But I believe it's my understanding that AR-15 upper receivers are forever not firearms, at least until they change their opinion again. Because again, this is not law. This is just the ATF. The ATF can't make a law. They can't change the law. They are just ruling on how they interpret the existing law.
They're just changing their interpretation of a regulation they enforce. There's absolutely nothing shady about that. Not at all.
No. So it's my understanding that this doesn't change anything. And in theory, if someone wants to come out with a new brand, like if, you know, some company that doesn't make it, like Car Arms. Car Arms suddenly wants to make a Car Arms AR-15. They will not have to submit any new any of these new rules. But if someone comes up with something like a, you know, like the SCAR 16 when it came out, which is a novel approach to a gun that is AR-15 like, but also at the same time entirely not an AR-15, though the Remington Bushmaster ACR. It's not an AR-15, but it has a lot of AR-15 like features, including the way that the upper and lower mate together and the modularity of it. Well, it may not be so modular, and I don't know exactly how that plays out. And furthermore, if another company wants to come out with a striker-fired pistol that is not a Glock, that is not an M&P, or various other old technology, grandfather technology, now it sounds like the slide is also now a receiver because it has crucial firing components in it, namely the striker and the chamber.
The thing that gets me about this is that the first, to my knowledge, I'm sure there are going to be some people who go, well, actually, but to my knowledge, the first semi-auto pistol was the 1911, and that was made in the year 1911. It's over 100-year-old technology. This pistol outdates or predates the ATF. The ATF has had, what, 60 some odd years? And they're only just now real. I mean, it seems to me that there should be some sort. Okay, I know. I'm trying to advocate for common sense in government, and that's ridiculous. But it seems like there ought to be some sort of common sense. It's like, look, y'all, you had plenty of time to deal with it. It wasn't a problem for decades and decades. It wasn't a problem when you first came into existence. Why is it suddenly a problem now? No, shut up, go away.
Mm-hmm. I will actually, there is a bunch of stuff before the 1911, though you're not too far off. But
whatever.
I had the Borchardt is generally considered one of the first semi-auto pistols to really hit mainstream, and I believe that one is close enough to the Luger. I know the Luger pistol, the P08 Luger, is absolutely a self-contained firearm entirely in the upper, even though the lower is, I believe, the serialized component. Though I may be wrong on that, but either way, yeah, this technology. I've got a Colt 1908 25 that was, you know, first invented in designed in 1908, and it is a striker fired pistol. It has all of the aspects that a Glock have, and what these guys are saying is the, oh, this is really, really weird technology that supersedes existing gun law. And no,
it existed before you did, you idiots.
Yes.
I mean, when we were talking about this before, and maybe this is something you'll want to go into in more detail when you talk to Mr. Blatt, but you had the theory, and I can't even really call it controversial, but you stated that you think that the plan here is to choke the firearms industry to death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because essentially what this is doing, and again, that one of the big questions I have is wading through this huge document, I haven't really seen exactly what happens to a gun made after this date that is new technology, that is using a quote-unquote split receiver, is what they're calling it. You know, how is that handled? Because you could take the slide off of one Glock and put it on another Glock, and you can mix and match them and do all sorts of stuff with it. And what is that? If you take the slide off of one Glock 19 and put it on another Glock 19, well, if those top slides are matching serialized, or are they two separate guns? Do you need to do two background checks? I don't know. But either way, it's going to be a royal pain in the butt for a company to make another gun like an AR-15, especially since the one of the whole reasons why the AR-15 is so amazing is that you can have one lower receiver and five or six different uppers. You can have one with a long barrel and a high-powered scope on it for longer range shooting, and then you can have something with like a red dot set up for you with a shorter barrel for close range, and then you can have it in 300 blackout and 450 Bushmaster and 50 Beowulf and what is like 22. I mean, you could just mix and match and change it around all you want, because that bottom component is just the fire control group and everything else can be changed, and that's awesome. And the ATF is kind of saying, well, we're going to make that a pain in the butt, and so it's going to essentially tie us to this olden technology. Glock's going to be fine because they've been making the same gun for 40 years. They've just been making it bigger and smaller and different dimensions. And the AR-15, we joke about, you know, going to the trade shows and, oh, look, here's another table filled with AR-15s. Yawn. And then suddenly somebody comes out with something new and they're going to say, okay, well, you're going to have to play all these new rules that make absolutely no sense, that I can't even figure out what the heck they mean by this. So yeah, that's exactly what I think. Is I think it is going to make it so that companies are forced to just make old technology, just different versions of what we've already got, and essentially freeze everything in time.
The irony of all this, and I'm certain they haven't considered this, is that if they are successful, then large portions of the firearm portion, the F part of the ATF, is going to go away. And with that is going to be a resulting loss of funding and manpower, mm-hmm. which is ironic, because one of the first things any successful government bureaucracy does is make sure that nothing happens to shrink the bureaucracy, because you want to be there forever. And if suddenly they don't need all of these firearm agents working at ATF, I mean, look, I'm not going to be saying that they're going to fire them, because Lord knows the government is very stupid. It might result in a crackdown on alcohol or tobacco or whatever. I don't know. But it just seems to me like this is a way to drastically shrink their budget if they get what they want. And, if it weren't for the fact that they would do amazing damage to the country and to law-abiding citizens and to our technology base, I would be sitting here laughing at the long-term implications of them doing this to themselves. But it's just not that easy. I'm just going to shake my head and have another drink.
Yeah, I don't blame you. So yeah, so like, moving forward, so that's there. We will be reporting that on a future reporting on that more on a future ACP, because yeah, we gotta get down to the bottom of what this actually means. And so yeah, let's move on to another story, which is, so we've got two stories which both have the same outcomes, and I have different feelings about both of them. One is that we talked about the death of Amir Locke. Mm-hmm. He was a man in, was it Minneapolis? Is it Minnesota?
I think so. I'm not sure. At this point, I'm just willing to ascribe any sort of bad police action to Minneapolis, but I'm probably being mean.
Let's see.
Yes, Minneapolis.
Minneapolis. I knew it was Minnesota. But yeah, he was sleeping on his, I believe, his brother's couch, and the police were serving a search warrant. They'd served a search warrant for like multiple units in this apartment complex. And they were given to them as no-knock warrants, so they keyed into the unit. They were looking for actually Mr. Locke's cousin, who was wanted for murder. They have they have since caught him, and he is not a great guy. He's a heavily gang tied in, and this is appears to be a gangland assassination. The person that was killed, she was a drug deal killing, and so. But they were looking for this, you know, this cousin who was, I think, you know, 16, 17, 18, young teenager. And they keyed into this apartment. They had their flashlights going. They get in. They announce themselves, and Mr. Locke wakes up. He is startled, and he has on the ottoman beside him a pistol, and he grabs the pistol, and I don't think he even gets a chance to point it at them, and he is shot dead. And they're ruling that this is they're not going to charge him on this, and I don't like that. I don't like that at all. I think that's that is super bad, especially given some of the other instances where I think it was the same jurisdiction was the police officer who was conducting a traffic stop, and the guy sped away, started driving to evade. And evade them, and she pulls out her Glock and yells "Taser, Taser, Taser!" and shoots him in the stomach fatally. And she's in prison now over that. And I would note that there were officers actually in front of the car, and so I would say, from my judgment, I would say it looks like it would actually be pretty justifiable for her to shoot him, since he was attacking fellow officers with a deadly weapon, namely a car. And I believe it was pointed out in court that they were aware that he was he had been convicted of weapons charges in the past. So I can see many a reason for why she would be justified in shooting him dead. But because she announced that she thought she was reaching for her taser at the time, she's I think it was manslaughter was what they gave her. I didn't really follow it all that much because it's a depressing case. Oh, but yep, they're no billing that one.
So I brought this to your attention, and this is thematically related, if not actually related. So there has been a ruling by the Fourth Circuit that you can answer the door armed. And a lot of people are going, well, duh. And I want to bring this to people's attention because I hadn't heard of this until I read this Ammoland article. So there's a case called Nibs versus Mumford, which is a case out of Ohio. And in 2018, I'm just going to give you the brief outline here. In the early morning hours of Sunday, April 29th, 2018, Macon County Sheriff's Deputy Anthony Mumford Jr. shot and killed Michael Scott Nibs. Now, what's important about this is that it was a very late hour or very early in the morning, depending on how you want to look at it. The deputy responded to a report of some sort of disturbance. I can't find it anymore. My head's hurting. The point being, he did not approach with his lights or siren. And he was looking around the Nibs household with a flashlight. And the homeowner, who apparently noticed this strange person walking around with a flashlight, while still inside his home, racked his shotgun. Now, what's very interesting is that the articles that I've read say that there's a dispute as to whether or not the shotgun was aimed at the deputy. I find that interesting because I haven't found any other witnesses to the shooting. I freely admit I could have missed something because I came up with this pretty close to the last minute here. Mm-hmm. But the point being is the articles make a point of saying it's in dispute, and really it seems like it would just be what the deputy said. So I don't know what's going on. That's very strange. There's also the fact that charges against Deputy Mumford were dismissed by a district attorney who himself was dismissed, by which I mean he was removed from his position. He was fired for irregularities. So there's all sorts of weird hinky stuff going on here. But the point of this rambling story, as I sound a lot like Weirdbeard here, is you've got a deputy who's acting kind of suspiciously. He doesn't have his lights and siren on. He hasn't previously identified himself as police. You've got a homeowner indoors who has a shotgun, who racks the shotgun. The deputy, according to him, says that he's police, but there's really no way for the homeowner to identify him. And God, it's not like we don't have criminals or other home invaders pretending to be police coming in. And so when he hears the homeowner racking the shotgun, he, short version, shoots through the door, through the window, and kills the homeowner. And the upshot of all of this is that this was kicked up to a circuit level court, and the court has stated that the mere possession of a firearm by a homeowner is not sufficient to justify the use of deadly force by officers. That there is a right to come to the door with a firearm. Mm-hmm. Officers must identify themselves as officers to gain qualified immunity. That's really important. Merely a verbal announcement without visual confirmation is not sufficient to gain qualified immunity. So if they shout that they're cops, that's mm-hmm. not enough. You need to be able to see their badges, their identification, at the very least some sort of flashing light. And, and the fifth point, sufficient precedent exists for officers to be aware of their duty in these situations. In other words, they need to know about this. And while it is tragic that Mr. Nibbs was shot and killed, refreshing, I think, is a good way to put it, that this was actually escalated and a circuit court ruled, I don't know if you want to call this in favor of citizens or against the police, but I really like that bit about how qualified immunity is not going to apply if the police don't properly identify themselves. And for people who don't know, qualified immunity is that almost magical statute which says that the police can break the law in pursuit of enforcing the law, and they are immune from prosecution. The classic example is if they are chasing a speeder, they may also break the speed limit. Presuming, of course, that they've got their lights and siren flashing and things like that. You know, we recognize that they are enforcing the law. And so qualified immunity has been used to get away with a lot of stuff. And this is a step in the right direction. I don't know if this is going to be further appealed in banc, if there's going to be a circuit split, but this is definitely a case of something good coming from something awful.
Mm-hmm. And one quick correction. This is actually North Carolina. I was actually reading the circuit court thing, and the circuit court is really just listed towards the entire circuit. And I saw Ohio and thought that was good enough, and it wasn't. So apologies. But yeah. And this actually is a great dovetail. I didn't actually make that connection when you were putting this story in the show notes the fact that the police came in, it was a dark apartment. They had their police flashlights, which are quite bright, that room filling thing. So the police are going to be silhouetted, and he's not going to be able to identify them directly because these lights are being shined in his eyes, and he is going to reach for the gun, which is beside him, which he legally owned and had every right to have. And they did say police. I could argue that if you're fast asleep and get woken up out of a dead sleep, how aware are you of what the people are saying that woke you up? But yeah, he reached for his gun, and that seems like a dirty shoot. And in fact, this is, so we'll see where this goes. Mm-hmm. Hopefully someone will make this connection and appeal to a Supreme Court on this nonsense no bill charge, because this definitely seems like a wrongful death and another reason to get rid of no knock warrants, because it was an apartment. What's if the you know, the murder suspect was in the apartment, which he was not, you know, what's he going to do? Stake some people out at the fire escape and then knock on the door.
Or get him as he comes out to go to work.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah. Come in the middle of the day. Get everybody as they head out to go to work or things like that. And then if they think everybody's gone, then do your no knock warrant in what you think is going to be an empty apartment. But yeah, this was nonsense. And a different kind of nonsense is the, we talked about it in, was it the last show? I think it was the last show.
Yeah, I think we did briefly talk about it. You're talking about the porch shooting in Texas, aren't you?
Correct. And that too, the grand jury has declined to prosecute. And that one I'm feeling much better about. We've talked about this and saying that it's not a righteous shoot, I think is the best way to put it. It definitely is a case of a whole bunch of people acting badly and making very, very bad choices that resulted in one man's death. And there's certainly a whole bunch of responsibility to go around. And I would not be surprised if there's going to be a civil suit after this because of said responsibility. But I saw enough of the instances of uses of deadly force, enough boxes got checked off, in my opinion, that it is a marginally clean shoot. And so I am glad that he's not being prosecuted, because I think it would be a waste of public resources. And let's be honest, he shot the ex-husband of his current girlfriend, and who is the father of his girlfriend's children, who I believe witnessed their own father's death. That's going to turn his life inside out in no sorts of good ways, including also the trauma of taking another person's life. We saw what Kyle Rittenhouse went through for a much cleaner shoot, in my opinion. And I'm glad they're not doing it. I'm wondering if there's going to be, it was a Texas, so I believe Texas may be one of those states where the shooting was not ruled I don't know if it was ruled justified as far as how the system works, if the grand jury declines to prosecute, if that's considered justifiable. But either way.
Well, I'm not a lawyer, but I believe so.
Okay, yeah, so he may actually be protected from lawsuits, because there are several states out there that state that if a shooting is deemed justified by law, you cannot be sued for the wrongful death of somebody in civil court.
I mean, my reasoning here is that if the grand jury decides that a crime wasn't committed and therefore he doesn't need to be tried, then, you know, the word justified isn't used, but you would think that, well, you don't,
it's certainly
try
by default.
You don't try people for justified shootings, and you don't acquit people whose shootings aren't justified. Therefore, by default, it kind of has to be justified.
And it's not like there's any reasonable doubt. We saw him shoot and kill him, and he's not denying that he shot and killed him.
Yeah.
Like, everybody knows who is dead and who took that person's life. It's just a question of, there are times when it is legal to take another human's life, and there's times when it is not. And this was in that gray area.
Yeah, I don't know if I've said it here or not, but I have said before that by Texas standards, this did seem maybe barely to be legal, but ethically, morally, it's all very fuzzy, because there are instances where both people made some bad choices. And so, you know, the law may find them innocent. For those of you who believe in a higher power, in eternal judgment, you know, your deity of choice may disagree. And I'm not going to say that you're wrong. It's all very, very questionable here.
Mm-hmm.
But I grudgingly agree with the grand jury on this.
Yeah, we should always be making it harder for a situation to escalate to deadly force, because it's just no good comes of it. Nobody ever says, oh my God, I was so happy to be in that justifiable shooting. They may say I was happy that I had my gun with me that day. They may have said that I'm glad I was able to defend my life and I'm alive today. But I've never heard anyone say, oh, best day of my life was when I killed somebody. And so this is one of those instances where, like, my overall statement is, you turn to the guy and say, the kids aren't here, get off my property, you are now trespassing. And then instead of going inside and getting a carbine and running them off that way, you call everybody else inside, shut the door and lock it. And then you can get the gun. Absolutely get a gun if you don't have it on you already, because now you're inside your home. And if he chooses to do anything but leave, call the police. And if he attempts to break into the home, then it is a clear-cut case of self-defense. Somebody is attempting to force entry into your home after you've told them they're trespassing. Yeah, shoot them. They're not there to do good things. And so, but in the instance of coming out on, you know, onto your porch and leaving away from a confrontation and coming back to a confrontation, oh, just red flags, red flags, red flags. Don't be that guy.
I personally would have called the police much earlier in that timeline, but yeah.
All right. So here's another, I guess, interesting story is a good way to put it, is that, a couple of days ago at the time of this recording, I think it actually had happened by the time we were recording for the last show, but nobody was reporting on it. It was not really national news. It was just a blip on the news wire. There was a mass shooting in Sacramento, California. I believe it was at a concert. Like I said, I actually don't even know that much about this because, again, nobody's talking about this story. They say it broke out at 2 a.m. in a popular nightlife area. The big thing that's going through is that it is strongly suspected. I don't think it has still been confirmed as of yet, but it sounds like the shooter may have used a full auto Glock or similar gun. And it's certainly something I've been seeing a bunch of recently. I don't know if you've been seeing these videos too, but videos are popping up of gangland shootings where people have either bought, because I know there have been some instances where some of these Chinese made airsoft, quote unquote, airsoft upgrades exist, where you can convert your airsoft pistol into your airsoft Glock replica into a full auto airsoft Glock, and it's not all that different from an actual Glock auto sear. And then, of course, also you can 3D print these things, and those that's not going away.
And of course, the ATF honeypots on Wish.com.
Absolutely, yep. And so, yeah, these auto seared Glocks are starting to show back up. I've got a link to the trace where they are just clutching at their pearls with all that, and they're making it sound like it's actually a big deal. But Aaron, have you ever been lucky enough to shoot a full auto Glock?
No, not a full auto Glock.
I was one time hanging out with an SOT who had an auto sear for a Glock, but I can't remember exactly what was going on with it. But that's actually one of those things on my bucket list that I'm not that much of a full auto guy, but I really, really do want to shoot one of these Glocks with the auto sear in them, of course, in a fully legal environment. it's it pretty much needs to be done through a through an FFL that has a special occupancy tax. Everything I've ever heard about these things is, first up, the cyclic rate is like through the damn moon. And second up, since it is literally a handgun, that it is extremely uncontrollable. So if you have like a Glock 19 or a Glock 17 and you're not using one of the 33 round Glock magazines in it, you are, it's pretty much one shot. You pull the trigger and the ammo's gone. And hopefully the gun's still pointing in that direction and it doesn't turn around in your hand and one of the rounds goes up your nose. And so, yeah, the, and I would note, like, yeah, if, when I do get a chance to, I'm not like having like a 17, you know, or 20 round magazine in the gun for start off. I'm going to be like, all right, cool. Put three in. And let's see where let's see what it does. And I'm gonna hang on to that thing like it's a live cobra.
You know, this might actually be a good time, because I mean, if you're SOT, you can do these things, to put a forward grip on that bit under the barrel that usually has a light or a laser, because in that particular instance, that might help with control.
Yes, and if you actually look. If you look online of people shooting full auto Glocks, you will find that I bet you it's 70% of them have shoulder stocks attached, because yeah, you want to tuck that sucker into your shoulder so that you can get another point of contact. So yeah, this is a story that no one is talking about. And, there's been, I think, three men arrested, in suspicion of this, though. The last I read on it, the charges were of weapons charges and not actually of murder and attempted murder, because there were six people killed and I think 12 people wounded. Like, it was, this was a fairly bad, six dead, 12 wounded, fairly bad mass shooting. But it does, but I know at least one of the suspected shooters was actually wounded in this, which implies that this may have been a two-way range, not your typical spree killing where it is just one person shooting a gun indiscriminately into people. This may have been a hit. This may have been a gangland attack. And that would explain why people are not talking about it very much. Certainly, at least one, if not all, of the members that have been arrested for the shooting here do have ties to various street gangs. And really, the reason I point this out to you is that mass shootings are 110% subjective when it comes to the media. You've heard me say a million and one times on my weird audio fisks when they say, oh, there's been 750,000 mass shootings this week. You know, there hasn't, because when you have an event like Parkland or Sandy Hook, we're still talking about Parkland and Sandy Hook, and that happened years ago. People talk about it. It becomes national news for days. And now you're going to suddenly tell me that there's also been another 30 or 40 mass shootings that have happened that you just don't even know anything about. No, that's not true. But also at the same time, if a mass shooting is not useful enough to be pushing gun control laws, maybe you don't see nearly as much. I've got links to The Trace, where they are pushing really, really hard about the prevalence of these new auto sears, of which I say God bless the gangbangers, because the sooner their gun is empty, the sooner they're not a threat to me. And if you're shooting a full auto Glock, good luck keeping that front sight on me. But this is just another one of those instances that where you see the the politicization of I can't even say that word. It's good enough. You know the word. The news has become a political mouthpiece.
And of course, this happened in California, which has really stringent gun control laws. It has magazine capacity laws. It is very difficult, almost impossible, I would say, in Sacramento to get a concealed carry permit. Assuming this person is a felon, that which is probably pretty likely, felon in possession is illegal. And of course, since 1986, creation of new machine guns has been illegal, as well as ownership of the auto sears. So again, I mean, I really wasn't counting on my fingers, but that was what? Half a dozen laws broken already. Plus, of course, the illegality of assault, murder, intent to murder, all of the other things.
They've also got 3D printing. They've got their goofy ghost gun rules where there's going through. So, I mean, number one, it's completely illegal to print an auto sear of any kind, period, full stop, doesn't matter. Like, I don't own a Glock, but if I printed or somehow acquired a Glock auto sear, that would still be illegal. I don't own an AR-15. If I got my hands on a Lightning Link that I didn't pay my tax stamp on, that would be illegal for me to do, even though I don't have, it's just a piece of sheet metal and I don't have a gun to drop it in to make it go burped. But that is how the law is written. Just possession of an auto sear is completely illegal. So the moment you print one, if this was a 3D printed auto sear, is when it becomes a crime.
Yeah. So the point being, so much about this was illegal. I'm honestly surprised that we haven't heard more blood dancing, waving the blood shirt and saying we need to pass one more law. Maybe we can start hoping that people are starting to see that criminals are going to break the law no matter how many laws there are.
Yeah, it's almost like they don't care.
Almost like.
It's almost like they don't pay sales tax when they sell their drugs.
But, you know, let's lighten the mood a little bit. We're going to end here on a good note because there actually is a good law that's about to happen. We talked about it last week and we thought it would happen by the time you heard it. And it didn't, but it looks like it's going to happen by the time you hear this. Weird. I hear you. This is like you're the third time you've tried to interrupt. So go ahead and say what you want to say.
I'm excited. Brian Kemp, the governor of Georgia, is going to be signing the constitutional carry bill. And so I believe this is 26, isn't it? Or is this 25th?
This will be the 25th.
Okay. So this is officially half the country's countries. Oh, boy, it's been a day.
Well, I mean, you were almost right. Half of the country's states.
Yes, half the country's states. Yes, thank you, Aaron. That's not what at all what I was trying to say, but you know what? I are smart. That's what I was trying to say. Half the country's states are now constitutional carry, and like a huge percentage of the country's landmass is constitutional carry. And so this is awesome. This is amazing. This is good for you too, Aaron.
Oh, definitely.
Because now I think every state touching Florida is now constitutional carry. And then also, if you want to take a boat across the Gulf of Mexico, unless you go to Mexico, which is Mexico, you're bumping into Texas.
Yep.
And they are also constitutional carry. So that certainly was what got New Hampshire going. Because New Hampshire, I was like surprised that they were honoring their carry permits for as long as they did. And then Maine turned it. And so Maine, Vermont, and New Hampshire has a border with Canada, which is Canada. And New Hampshire has a border with Massachusetts, which is Massachusetts. And so they went, seriously, what are we doing? And of course, also we have the Ron DeSantis calling for constitutional carry in Florida. May not happen, but it is better than nothing.
Agreed. And I know that he wants to sign it, but I'm just over here being very skeptical about when that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. If that's going to... Well, it will eventually. I mean, I believe I said that Florida will be the last southern state to pass it, and then I have heard from several people up in North Carolina, home of the pistol purchase permit, that wonderful artifact from Jim Crow era laws, saying, no, 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 North Carolina is going to be the last, and okay, it feels kind of odd to be wrestling for last place, but there you go.
And seriously, North Carolina, like, I keep having a Nelson Mandela effect with the pistol purchase permit. I keep thinking that, oh yeah, a couple of years ago they repealed that, but no, they still haven't.
They tried to, but for whatever reason, it failed.
Yeah. North Carolina, it's an embarrassment. So yeah, we will see who the race is, but at the time that you're listening to this, it will be 25 states. Hopefully soon it'll be 26, because geez, they're falling fast.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it seems like every time we do a show, there's a new state that has constitutional carry. I like to point out that, number one, if you live in a state where it is a May issue state, you're in a weird state. Your state's full of a bunch of weirdos when it comes to gun control laws. That's one of those strange places. If you are, and now really, if you're in a state that requires you to have a carry permit to lawfully conceal a firearm, you're in one of the weird states, because yeah, now it's a whole bunch of states have all just said, yeah, we really don't need that. And we've clearly been seeing, I've clearly been browsing the trace. They've got a whole bunch of articles on how all these states that have gotten rid of their carry permits now are just, the streets are awash in blood. Oh, wait, no, that's California.
So, yeah, I'm not really sure which state will be next. About the one thing I do know is that it looked like Nebraska was going to be the next one, but apparently that one has stalled out for some reason. So, you know, just looking at the brief headlines here about 3 to 5 hours ago, it looks like the Nebraska legislature, you know, shut down that bill. So it's not going to be happening this session, but maybe next session.
Oh, that's too bad. But still, they're getting close. That's, I mean, it's just, it's becoming very normalized, and that is an amazing thing. I mean, we've seen the same thing with recreational marijuana. Is the a couple of states had the medicinal stuff, and then a few states did switched over to recreational, and now a whole bunch of states have switched over. So now that it's one of those, like, I have to look it up, like, oh, is marijuana actually illegal in the state? And hopefully at some point, I know the House has a bill out to take it off the DEA statutes, which I highly support, because not only would it now suddenly get rid of a lot of the stupid crap that's going on in the states that have decriminalized marijuana, such as allowing businesses to handle their money like any other business, and to get business loans and insurance and various other things. I can't remember all the different stuff that you can't do because marijuana is still illegal federally. So if you are selling marijuana, you are still, under the eyes of most interstate groups, a criminal. So we will see what happens with that. But again, if it suddenly gets decriminalized, hey, guess what? If you live in Texas, where marijuana is not at all legal, it will still be not at all legal, because it's not like the kids that are getting busted for a dime bag of dope in their pocket. It's not like they're getting arrested by the DEA. They're getting arrested by the local cops because they're enforcing the local statute that makes marijuana illegal. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, even if they just moved it from a Schedule 1 controlled substance to a Schedule 2, which would then, you know, admit that there is a medical use for it, and then it could join drugs such as, you know, morphine, opium, codeine, hydrocodone, things like that. Just doing that would make a big difference.
I don't want to step on the third rail with that, but like, as my life in the pharmaceutical industry goes, that, honestly speaking, medicinal marijuana pisses me off. I don't like it, because it's just so drastically different from every other pharmaceutical drug out there, as far as its administration and its how it is consumed and its concentration and all of that stuff, that It absolutely has medicinal properties. I'm not arguing with that. You know, so does the martini that I'm drinking right now. There are some medicinal effects to alcohol, but I am not saying that I just drank a glass of medicine. I drank a glass of martini. and I think that it is perfectly fine for people to use marijuana medicinally. But the solution to that is, instead of making it medicine and dealing with all the stuff that it doesn't do as far as FDA approval of drugs, just make it legal recreationally so that people could just use it and use it how they feel fit.
I agree with you. I was just simply saying, if the government didn't want to take that drastic a step, just making it a little less tightly controlled would do a lot of good.
Yeah, it absolutely would. It absolutely would. So we have one segment for you. It's a little on the long side, but it is a good one. A friend of the show, Paloma Capana, has a new book out, and to promote it, she wanted to tell yet another absolutely unbelievable story from the January 6th protest. I am pleased to welcome back to the Assorted Calibers podcast, Paloma Capana. I mean, Paloma, you should know her from her 2AM Patriot website and blog and all the publications on that. And Paloma, you like to stump me. You asked me about Evan Newman, and I unfortunately have not heard of that person. And I think you've told me that I'm not alone.
No, you're not. I think that among the more than 800 charged defendants, Evan Newman had evaded even my radar. Until just recently, he made the headlines as being the January 6th defendant who sought and received political asylum in Belarus. Now, does he sound familiar?
I'm still at a loss at this story. I'm just amazed at the fact that, wow, what a poignant and topical location for him to flee to.
Well, a little bit of a teaser as we go through some of his details. He's not American.
Okay.
So at least in terms of the notebooks and my ever expanding list of interesting defendants, he's not one who had made my radar, but he certainly goes into a category I suspect many of us had wondered about. So we asked this question, you know, how many people who were there were FBI agents, were confidential informants to the FBI, were potentially plants, Antifa. I mean, you name it. There's kind of been this lineup of questions people are vocally asking. But have we really asked aloud, is Russia doing more than simply operating inside your computer with quote-unquote disinformation through social media platforms? So enter the scene Evan Newman, age 49. A criminal complaint was filed against him by the DOJ on March 23 of 2021, with six counts ranging from obstruction to violent entry to disorderly obstruction of police function on Capitol grounds. It was initially filed under seal with judicial approval, and about 3 months later, the DOJ moved to unseal the criminal complaint, telling the court that Mr. Newman was at large. Now, still, nobody in the media really picked up on it. Funnily enough, it wasn't until December 10 of 2021 that Mr. Newman was indicted by a grand jury. And the counts went from six counts originally to now 14 criminal counts that he would be facing. But I'm going to say that he was indicted in absentia because Mr. Newman had already left the United States months prior. So prior to the original complaint being filed, check this out. On February 26, 2021, now I'm going to quote you out of the criminal complaint. Members of the FBI's special surveillance group saw Newman leaving his home in Mill Valley, California, and followed him to the international terminal at San Francisco International Airport, where they interviewed him. So there's a couple things we need to look at there. Number one, did we know that the FBI had a special surveillance group? And did we know that that group was actually surveilling, I want to say Americans, but the plot is going to thicken here. And so, you know, keep moving forward. But the second thing out of the criminal complaint that I really want people to look at, so I'll be putting this up on my website, 2ampatriot.com. On page 14 of the criminal complaint, there is a map of the U.S. Capitol that alleges it contains cell phone tracking of Mr. Newman's movements inside the U.S. Capitol. This is a map that I have not seen in any other case. So for other defendants, like those who are alleged to be oath keepers, the allegations are your standard cell phone pinging, you know, plus or minus this many feet. This person may have been standing outside on the east, west, north, south side of the Capitol building. It may have gone into the building. It may have left. Not in Mr. Newman's case. In Mr. Newman's case, they actually are saying it is a telephone number that is not an authorized number to be in the building. So this map looks much more like there's a tracking device by the U.S. federal government somehow on Mr. Newman's person, whether in his phone or somehow otherwise, because it's a point to point from one end of the Capitol to the other, a whole multiplicity of dots. That really got me curious, but in the same complaint, what tipped the balance on curiosity? The FBI claimed Mr. Newman attended the Ukrainian Orange Revolution in 2004 and 2005, and that he wore a scarf commemorating the Ukrainian Orange Revolution to the U.S. Capitol on January 6th.
And now I think, what was the Orange Revolution in Ukraine?
Well, drill down, because obviously right now as we're recording, it's March 30th, Putin and the Russian army has invaded Ukraine. Rewind backwards earlier than Putin invading Crimea to the Orange Revolution, where in early 2000s, the Ukrainian people were having their own sort of version of, you know, our war of independence. They're saying government is corrupt. They're saying certain leaders need to be replaced. There's opposition parties. There's complaints somebody has been poisoned by the Russians. And the Orange Revolution, which went on for several days, was the people's uprising in the streets of protesting, wanting fair elections. So fast forward to January 6th, here now is Mr. Newman wearing his Ukrainian Orange Revolution scarf at the U.S. Capitol. But something about that just didn't quite work for me. And in the criminal complaint, there was one sentence that commented from the FBI about Mr. Newman's LinkedIn profile. So being a good research hound, I decide, oh, let me go take a look at this for myself. So I go to Mr. Newman's LinkedIn profile and I start clicking around things and I'm saying, wait, I don't see any listing here that he is saying he participated in the Orange Revolution or that he supported it or that he is Ukrainian. So I'm clicking to expand and I'm clicking, you know me, I'll push all the different buttons trying to find things. Deep in Mr. Newman's profile. Ah, okay, here are the words Kyiv, Ukraine, except that it's Kiev. So it's not the modern Ukrainian spelling, it's the traditional Russian spelling. And it says that he was the co-founder in 1994 of Global Matchmaking, an international dating service that specialized in matching California men with Ukrainian women using the internet for real-time and low-cost correspondence.
Okay.
I don't see the media covering this. So when we joke about mail order brides, okay, meet Evan Newman.
Well, I was actually waiting for the other shoe to drop with you, Paloma, because like I said, all of these reports that you give me, you surprise me because these are people I haven't heard of. and the media is not covering, and then you give me something that sounds like the plot of a Robert Ludlum novel, and you are not disappointing me. So the my mind immediately went to Eric Swalwell and his Chinese girlfriend quotation marks Fang Fang. Who happened to be a spy for the Chinese government. And you're telling me about this guy that's shady and skipping around and involved in all these revolutions. And you're saying he's running a dating website. It could be that he's just helping get Ukrainian women, you know, connected to well-to-do Americans. Sure. No problem with that. Sure. I got no problem with that. they've got lovely women over there and Californians have excess amounts of money. I don't see a problem. with this.
Well, but I guess I see a problem when you drill deeper into his background, and he also claims to be from Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
And his preceding job is described as a research and development company that attempts to pair a pulse detonation engine provided by a Russian Federation power company to a Tesla turbine, which we've researched, developed, and built freehand.
And that is a Nikola Tesla patent turbine, not an electric car.
Yes, I would believe that would be correct.
Yep.
Yes. So who is Evan Newman? Because Evan Newman took off. Mm-hmm. Evan Newman is not in jail. Evan Newman is not even in the United States. Before the FBI and the DOJ managed to file their criminal complaint and get a judge to sign an arrest warrant for him in March 2021, Evan Newman had already left the U.S. Like I said, February 26, 2021, members of the FBI's special surveillance group interviewed him at a San Francisco airport. Well, he left. Newman has now just shown up on Belarus state-sponsored TV, saying he followed the advice of his lawyer and fled to Europe. He claims his route was Switzerland to Italy to Ukraine for 4 months until they started sniffing around after him to ask who he was in the Ukraine, mind you. And in August 2021, crossed the border into Belarus on foot to seek political asylum. He has now been given political asylum. And what the U.S. media decided it was going to cover was a very carefully worded Department of Justice press release only. So they didn't go into the indictment. They didn't go into the criminal complaint. They didn't chase down all the little clues and leads provided in these documents that there's a deeper story to cover here. They simply took the DOJ press release of Friday, December 10, 2021, which says this California man has been indicted on charges of assaulting a law enforcement officer during the January 6th Capitol breach. They don't point out that the court already has essentially dismissed the case because they haven't been able to arrest or produce a defendant, and no attorney has appeared in the case on his behalf.
Wow.
So that makes us breaking news.
Yeah.
Ukrainian dating service and Russian technology.
And now so, seeking safe haven in Belarus, which, according to current events, has aligned itself with Russia in helping them move armor into Ukraine. So
right. And, you know, if you really study Evan Newman's LinkedIn profile, he's claiming that his job since October of 2019 was to design and engineer the electronics, software, artwork integration, and basic design of a leather handbag that would softly glow, reading the photographs from your phone and projecting them onto the handbag.
Huh. I just, every one of these little facts, all in light of everything else you've told me, just raises more and more questions.
I had a feeling that you might enjoy being introduced to a story and to a case that has essentially blipped and gone.
Mm-hmm.
Just blipped and gone. Where the real question here, I can't understand. How is nobody not asking the real question here, which is, who is Evan Newman and what was he doing at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th?
Especially since it's all the new hotness to be, you know, bagging on Putin and the Russians and even Russian oligarchs.
Absolutely.
And furthermore, Belarus is also getting a little bit of that, and Turkey as well, and a few other countries that are getting embroiled in this invasion of Ukraine. And so
yes,
there's certainly no reason for it to be getting a good leaving alone, but it sure is.
And it begs the question why the media is making such a circus out of it. I mean, I get it that the January 6th committee, not even a valid committee, all operating behind closed doors, is making its own circus. But shame on the U.S. media, pretty much without exception, for making a circus where we're not isolating critical questions. So, for example, in my mind, since January 6th, there has been this question of, okay, so there were a few bicycle rack type barriers at a couple different places. Who were the people like an Evan Newman, who is photographed and on video as physically pushing against those barricades, physically pushing them into officers, lifting them up off the ground, using them as an actual weapon? When in point of fact, all you had to do was walk around them. There wasn't a solid perimeter around the U.S. Capitol. But in a couple different locations, you have this display of force that goes on from a few selected people who, at a particular minute on the clock, because all the FBI stuff is down to like the minute, at 1:37 p.m., Evan Newman puts his hand, you know, upon the metal bicycle rack. At 1:39 p.m., his hand crosses the plane of the bicycle rack into the closed territory. So if you actually read even just a few of these complaints against a few defendants, you can actually start to put together your, so, okay, this person didn't arrive until 2:30. Okay, the party at that point is already completely downstream. You know, somebody getting there at 2:30 is irrelevant to January 6th. I would not even be bothering to charge them. It's a complete waste of the prosecutor's energy. The key question has always been, who got there first? And Evan Newman, if you put things on the timeline, is one of those who got there first. And look at the questions that we have to ask on who is Evan Newman. That's the kind of question that we should be asking.
Oh, I mean, I am both gobsmacked at the ins and outs of all of this, and also my heart is just sinking on the fact that this has happened on our soil and really isn't getting the coverage of this. Like you said, there's, you know, where is the media? Why is not every group out there reporting on all these details? Because there's so many details available.
Right, right. And even if we take a comparison, think about what went on at the Ellipse with President Trump. The day of January 6th begins with tens of thousands of people coming together, standing in the cold Washington, D.C. morning with the winds starting to pick up more towards the noon hour. That's your official forecast. Waiting 5+ hours of speakers and little musical interludes to hear the president speak. He speaks, people leave, there's no arrests. There's nothing. I've reviewed the Secret Service records that have been released, and it's thousands of pages. I've got National Park Service records, thousands of pages. It's a permitted event. There's nothing exciting. So you should be asking yourself, who are the agitators that showed up on the grounds of the United States Capitol before President Trump finished speaking? Mm-hmm. Key point in the timeline. The first group arrived to the Capitol before the 1 o'clock hour. President Trump did not finish speaking until after 1:15 p.m. So who were they? Who were these men and a couple women sort of scattered in there? That, to me, is a relevant question. I would be interested to see the analytics on that, as opposed to this complete shotgun melee of, let's just charge any single person that we can, even if it was Mr. and Mrs. America, who did nothing more than set foot on the grass outside the U.S. Capitol 2 hours downstream of the doors being opened, and they see what's going on. They turn around and they leave, which is the story of probably about 20 to 25% of people who have been charged with felonies. Why are you bothering to charge them? How does that get to the bottom of anything? If we're saying we're curious about what happened January 6th, top on my list is, who is Evan Newman? And where did he come from in the first place? And why did they let him slip the country, spend months in countries with extradition treaties? And not so much, because I've been through everything available on PACER, everything available on the federal criminal court filing system for this man. They did not so much as make a motion. They did not lift a finger to have him extradited during the months that he was in Italy, Switzerland, and Ukraine. Why not? 14 criminal counts. Why not? LinkedIn in plain view. Hello, I'm from Moscow. Hello, I came through Ukraine. Hello, I'm one of the first persons to physically assault police officers on January 6th at the Capitol.
And so, is there any hope for extradition or charging, or is Evan completely in the wind now?
Evan's completely in the wind, because on March 11, 2022, the federal judicial assignment system kicked Evan Newman off judicial assignment. He's now nothing to the U.S. criminal system. Nothing.
And
so here we have valid questions, and he is now nothing.
And how many defendants are still awaiting trial?
Still awaiting trial. Hundreds. Yeah. Hundreds. And of those, approximately 35 to 40, depending what day of the week it is and whether it's Enrique Tarrio in prison or not, who are incarcerated since their point of arrest.
Well, Paloma, you are absolutely lovely, but the stories you tell stink.
I will take that compliment. I will take that compliment, Weird, because I thought you of all people would find this absolutely fascinating. I mean, look at some of these other words on his LinkedIn profile: co-founder and president of Avi Blasters. And, you know, his language is robotic avalanche control that uses physics and math tricks. I mean, his LinkedIn profile is all but saying, nanny, nanny, boo, boo. It's such a taunt.
I can only think back to the half a dozen or so Robert Ludlum novels I have read. And it, I mean, just literally you're just very, very simple recounting of the facts. I mean, you're not even going into too many flowery narratives here. And yet you are absolutely sounding like so many of these just amazing spy novels that were written throughout the 90s.
Yes. And I've read so many of them. Yeah. So I think my only comment here is, listen, you know, if you're the next best-selling novelist and you're listening to this segment of Weird Beard and I want you to start your book with this conversation that Weird Beard and I are having for the Assorted Calibers podcast. And we want to be portrayed live. You do not have to fictionalize us. Let your book begin with us raising the question and your character taking the lead from here.
You have my express permission to use this as the cold open for both a book or a movie.
It is definitely a case of fact better than fiction, and I will be following this story as far as I can.
Oh, and you will keep us abreast with that, Paloma. And so I think you've already mentioned 2ampatriots.com. You've got a new book book coming. Actually, why don't you just give a quick plug for the January 6, 20 things.
Sure. So I have a brand new book that should be in my hot hands tomorrow and starting to be mailed. The title is January 6, 20 Things You Need to Know. Each of the items is a one-page write-up, perfect for you to start arguments at the family dinner table this Easter, perfect for you to photocopy and hand out at parades this summer, make a photocopy of the different facts and the truth, like January 6 at 1:15 p.m., President Trump's rally at the Ellipse ends without incident. It's a simple but powerful truth. This is what we need to get out there to turn the narrative and start the real conversation.
Well, thank you so much, Paloma. There'll be links in the show notes, and it was wonderful talking to you.
Thanks, Weird Beard, and thanks to all the listeners of Assorted Calibers podcast.
So I don't want to take away from the drama, I guess, of this story, because as you said, it is very gripping and it sounds like a Robert Ludlum novel, but I heard the name and I heard all these things, and I swear the only thing running through my head was Jerry Seinfeld going, "Hello, Newman."
And that is how Newman spells that. I always just thought about the, it's like Paul Newman, but way weirder.
But yeah, Newman was the scummy villain in Seinfeld who was always up to something. And then now we've got this as well. It seems fitting, I think. Maybe it's just my weird sense of humor right now because of the pain medication I'm on because of my headache.
And it ties in so wonderfully with all the current rage of the news, and yet nobody's talking about it.
It's so strange, all the things this guy does. I mean, mail order brides and weird Nikola Tesla engines and a purse that will read your phone and do a picture. It seems very much like this guy is a scam artist and he's hopping from scam to scam.
Mm-hmm. Or he's a state agent and he's just running a bunch of brackets. Again, I don't know if these are mail order brides. Obviously, there's a ton of mail order bride businesses, especially in Eastern Europe, where they are getting people out of there to find places that have far more money, freedom, and quality of life. You know, but at the same time, also my mind immediately went to the various honeypot industries. I mean, you've got Hunter Biden's in the news. There's certainly been a lot of talk that some of the women that are in those very scandalous photos in his laptop may or may not have been state actors. And of course, I mentioned Duke Nukem, Eric Swalwell, and his Chinese spy girlfriend, quote unquote. She was paid to love him. Because that's the way you get people to love Eric Swalwell. Let's kick him a little bit. He's a jerk. Oh, but yeah. So I don't know. As I said to Paloma after we finished recording, I said, "Paloma, if I had known you as long as I have, I would peg you for an absolute crank because these stories seem so absolutely unbelievable." It's one of those, how could there be a story this crazy that I have never heard of? You've never heard the name Evan Newman before, have you?
No, I have not.
Yeah, he's a real dude. There's links in the show notes to a couple of stories about him, really just to prove that he exists, and this is an actual, you know, an actual story that's gone through. And just, yeah, no, Paloma's not making this up. And I will say that I told Paloma also off the air that that under no circumstances was she sent me her other book. Just as a gift, and I told her, don't be sending me anymore. I'm gonna be paying for these pamphlets with my own money, and I bought a whole bunch of them. And actually, she threw an extra one in. She threw an extra one in because she screwed up the shipping. They came in two separate envelopes on the exact same day. So Paloma, it did nothing screwed up. It all came through just fine. And just for my for her mistake, she threw in an extra one. But I've got a whole bunch of one of which I'll give to my father, which will bother him so much. But I unfortunately haven't had a chance to leave. They're super short. I haven't had a chance to leaf through it just yet to give a review on it, just because my evening has gone, ever since the mail showed up, my evening has gone completely rodeo. I'll be talking more about them probably next week. But absolutely go to the show notes or just type in 2 AM Patriot into your search engine. I prefer DuckDuckGo because of ducks. And
because it doesn't spy on you or sensey you like Google does?
Yes, but I get an Android phone. It doesn't really matter. I just hope my Google spies are seeing all the stuff that's happening in the presence of that phone. So go check out Paloma's website where you can order a copy of her new book, and they're being sold for like $5 a whack. So yeah, so I bought a bunch of them because I think, you know, I'll see if my local library wants one. And again, this is just they're like party favors. You can just give them on out to people who may be curious.
Well, weird. You know who isn't curious? Well, I mean, I suppose they are, but not in that way. I'm talking about our patrons, of course. I mean, they're curious in that they want to listen to us, but they aren't. You know, this entire analogy is just falling apart. So I think I'm just gonna have you thank our patrons. How about that?
Well, what you're saying is they're not bi curious. They know. And what they know, whether they know that they are or they aren't, that's totally fine. We don't judge because we love you. We love each and every one of our listeners. Thank you so much for listening into this fine show, because what's the point of talking into a microphone if no one listens? But also a very special thanks to our extra beautiful and not at all bi-curious members on Patreon.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, weird.
Yeah, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with being bi. I'm saying you don't need to be curious about it. Just dive in. Okay, we're going to stop doing this right now. That's the end of that analogy. If you want to become a Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/assortedcalibrespodcast to sign up. And you can get things like early release the podcast. You can get this a couple of days early. Also, we have bonus content. We have the blooper reels, which are all the outtakes and various hilarities of this. I actually think most of the screw-ups that I did on this show all worked into the show, so I don't need to cut those out. But there's stuff before and after that is all going on that people love it. I get the most feedback for the blooper reels. We've got the ACB film tracks where we sit down and watch various movies and create commentary tracks for them. We're doing the Blade series. That's been a hell of a lot of fun. And we've got the ACP Mag Dump which it is an unscripted and uncensored bonus episode that we do once a month.
Also, please remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to us on the platform of your choice, and share the show with your friends both online and off.
I got a blog. It's called weirdworlds.com, and I'm also on another podcast every week called Handgun Radio, and it's on the Firearms Radio Network.
And you can find me in all the usual places. You know me by now. I don't need to tell you this.
Aaron Paulette's a big deal. Nate Spencer does our music. He's also a big deal. Me, I'm all right.
He wants to shoot a full auto Glock whatever, whereas I like to... or whatever you want to call it is assorted, and so is our podcast. I don't anymore. Good night.
Warby Gargle, everybody.